amazing resource for the world of theoretical physics, and I want you all to make the maximum use of it. That is our goal in life. What I'm going to talk about is something which may not make you happy. But I've listened to enough talks on the measure problem in inflation that it's encouraged me to think about this problem and try to define at least a sub-problem very precisely and to see if we can't find a completely unambiguous measure. And my main motivation is we shouldn't kid ourselves. I mean, what I'm really not in favor of is constructing a measure which is appropriate to fit the data and then sleeping happily. That's not what we should be doing. We should be constructing a measure which is based on very sound principles, which respects all the symmetries we want in the problem and live with the consequences of our predictions and not try to fudge them after the fact. So that's the motivation, and I'm interested in inflationary models, I'm interested in cyclic models. The question is there any natural measure on the space of cosmologies in these theories which we can trust? The main ingredients in this talk will be two. First of all, Penrose's long-standing critique of inflation, which I think has been ignored for a long time, which is very, very simple, and it just says that Hamiltonian evolution can never produce an unusual state from a random generic initial state. And the canonical measure that we use in Hamiltonian dynamics is invariant under evolution. And so how could we possibly explain the surprisingly special state of the universe today from some arbitrary assumed state in the past, which is what inflation is trying to do? Yeah, almost never. Fine. I put it deliberately on this slide. Yeah. No, the motive. That's right. Well, maybe. I mean, the motivation of inflation was to solve the flatness, horizon, entropy problems using Hamiltonian dynamics. So I think if you've only got almost, it's not. I solve this very rarely. It's not really a solution. True. If this is the only thing we'll disagree about, I'm very happy. The second ingredient, and I suspect the reason why people haven't taken Penrose's argument more seriously is it's just a formal, very succinct argument. And maybe people suspected, well, why should we use the canonical measure, or, you know, where are the details here? Okay. So the second ingredient, and that's my crucial assumption, is that when you count states in gravity, you should do it in an asymptotic region where the global properties of the space-time become sharp. Okay, so that's my basic assertion. And I'll claim that if you accept these two points of view, then actually in a certain specific setup, which I'll explain, you get a completely precise, unambiguous measure. Okay, so the measure problem in this setup is, I would claim, very clear. And unfortunately, a universe like ours is extremely unlikely in slow roll inflationary models. That's the conclusion. No. The potential would allow, but I'll show you why how I'm disallowing it. But you know, so I'm not dealing with eternal inflation. You'll see how. But what I am dealing with is the kind of vague arguments used to motivate, quote, chaotic inflation. I'm definitely dealing with those. Okay, so standard slow roll inflation, you're all familiar with. We take a scalar field with its equation of motion. We have the Friedman equation. This equation will be useful, the rate of change of the Hubble constant. And the first point is these are Hamiltonian and time reversal invariant. So that's the basis of Penrose's argument. I will focus on FRW spacetimes. I'll make some comments about more general spacetimes at the end if there's time. But that will actually be sufficient to make the point I want to make. And I believe this is very generous to inflation. I mean, I'm just granting you homogeneity and isotropy for free. Okay. So I'm in a very generous mood. And I'm going to assume V of phi is monotonic away for its minimum, so it just rises. So phi squared, anything that just rises up to infinity. I won't have any false vacua, no bubbles, anything like that, because I just want a really clear-cut example. I'm going to also focus on k equals minus 1, okay, so open hyperbolic universe, and the reason for that is twofold. K is minus 1, then the scale factor is monotonic in time, just increases. And secondly, if K is minus 1, the Hubble constant is monotonic in time also and only decreases. Okay, and that just makes counting easier. K equals minus 1, and I'm going to compactify the spatial slices. Okay, so here's the picture. We take a open universe, and we compactify it basically by imposing periodicity. And so that's the universe I'm talking about. I'm just using this as a mathematical device, just like when we do physics. We often put it in a box to keep everything finite, and my results don't depend on the compactification volume. Okay, so I'm just using it as a box, and you can choose it to be such that it won't interfere with the calculation you're doing. But I should just mention as a side, but in fact, this compactification or compact hyperbolic universe has specifically been advocated as a very natural setup for chaotic inflation, for example, by Linde. I mean, naively, this looks like a good thing to do because you're throwing out lots of modes. And so, you know, just a little patch, homogeneous patch, is going to take off and inflate. So, but I don't want to take that too seriously. At least it's true that there are some models which have specifically been advocated which fall exactly into the class I'll analyze. So if we look at these spacetimes, there's a two-parameter family of solutions. You can think of fixing A, and at a given A, there's phi and phi dot. So there are two-parameter family solutions. They all possess an initial singularity. Okay? So a generic one will start from a space-like singularity. And then it's just an open universe. So it evolves out, it becomes asymptotically flat, turns into Minkowski space, the matter dilutes away. And so that's what the space-time diagram looks like. The compactification volume is shown by this dashed line. So this is the radial coordinate. This is r equals 0. And basically, the compactification has some size. And on the conformal diagram, it looks like this. All the spacetimes start with a singularity, including the inflationary ones. And so there may or may not be inflation here. It doesn't really alter the conformal diagram. Oh, because it's an open universe. So you're going to remember you have monotonic potential. The minimum of the potential is the minimum of the potential is zero. Yeah, I mean I should have said lambda equals zero somewhere. Did I? Maybe I did. I meant to say I'm assuming the potential minimum is zero. Criteria for a measure, what would we like for a measure? Well, better be positive, if it means a probability, better be normalizable. It should be independent of slicing of space-time or coordinates on either, well, it should be independent of coordinates on space-time or field space. If we're allowed to change those coordinates, what the measure should be independent of that. There should be no ad hoc external structures, e.g. co-moving observers, volume factors. Let's not patch the theory up after the event. Let's just ask what the theory really predicts. And it should be a natural extension of the canonical quantum measure. I mean, in fact, it makes no sense to use the quantum measure to compute quantum fluctuations in inflation and not use it for the background. You know, there is a measure defined by the theory, but let's just use it. I mean, it all comes together. So let's use that. We'll use the canonical quantum measure for the background. And I really don't think this makes any sense to use canonical measure for quantum fluctuations, but not for the background. So what is the canonical measure? The canonical measure is just dp dq summed. So there's a two form. First, I don't know which paper Lubel wrote this down. He didn't. he was lucky to get his name on it. These people did study it. And unfortunately, their main result was wrong. They claimed that this measure made inflation very probable, but they'd missed a certain point that the measure is infinite. And that was then corrected by Hawking and Page, who showed that, in fact, it's ambiguous. That there's an infinite measure for inflation, and there's an infinite measure for no inflation, or little inflation. And you can't decide. And then there's a whole series of papers, including one by myself and Gary Gibbons, which this work is sort of an extension of. So what is this measure? Well, that's a two-form. So you should think about the phase space in mini superspace as initially four-dimensional. There's a dot, phi, phi dot. There's one constraint, the Hamiltonian constraint being zero, which is the Friedmann equation. So it's a three-dimensional space, and every cosmology is a curve in that three-dimensional space. And this is a two-surface, so if I take some two-surface, integrate this two-form along that two-surface, it counts the number of curves crossing, intersecting that two-surface in a particular way, and this is the canonical measure. So this only requirement of this surface can be any surface in phase space, which is pierced once by every classical trajectory. For example, you could pick it to be A equals constant, if you like A to be the time, and A is monotonic, so it's a good time. Or you could pick it to be the Hubble constant being constant. That's another monotonic quantity, and or anything else you like. And what you're guaranteed by this construction, because that's a closed form, is that doesn't matter which surface you pick, you can move that surface backwards or forwards, and you always get the same answer. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So this takes everything into account, satisfies all the conditions, 1 to 4, except normalizability. And the problem is the sigma surface isn't compact. And the reason for that is that in gravity, the Hamiltonian isn't positive. In fact, it's zero. I mean, as an operator, it has negative parts and positive parts, and the physical space is zero. Whereas in a normal statistical mechanics, where the Hamiltonian is positive, if you restrict to a surface of fixed Hamiltonian, you're restricting yourself to a compact subspace in phase space, and that defines a sensible measure. So the problem is you don't know how to do that in gravity. So here's some trajectories in phase space. You could think about it as phi and phi dot. Slow roll here looks like phi dot being nearly constant. This is m squared phi squared. Phi dot is nearly constant as you roll down the hill, and then every trajectory basically oscillates at the one on the hill. Better picture is to think of a three-dimensional space, so impose the Hamiltonian constraint to determine A, for example, and then plot H, phi, and phi dot. So you can think of H as the time, and then every trajectory just kind of runs down in time and goes down the plug hole. So this is simple enough theory. You can understand all these histories, so we know exactly what they do and calculate the measure. Now, as I've just pointed out, the flat space Gibbs ensemble is not obtained just by integrating over phase space. That would give infinity in flat space just as much as it does in gravity. So it's unreasonable just to integrate over all phase space. You've got to put something, some other information in. And the way we do this is we maximize the entropy. And by the way, it's a beautiful series of papers by Janes. I only read them recently, but they explain this information theory approach to statistical mechanics. And they're very general arguments why the entropy is the right quantity to maximize due to Shannon in the 30s, I think. But some very minimal assumptions. You ask, what is the right probability distribution to use if I have very limited information about some system? That's irrelevant. That's irrelevant. I mean, this setup is used in all kinds of places which don't have heat baths, like image reconstruction and signaling, and you know that's how Shannon invented it. It's nothing to do with a heat bath. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Okay. So this is where I'm coming from. So I want to maximize this quantity subject to some constraint. In usual statistical mechanics, we fix the energy. And that automatically fixes you to a, it doesn't quite fix you, but it constrains the probabilities so that you satisfy the average energy. And in fact, James makes the point that if you take this information theory approach, in fact, there's nothing that restricts you to equilibrium. Right. Correct. I agree. So the question we need to understand is what is the minimal information or what is the appropriate information to put into the gravitational ensemble which will make it meaningful. So in GR, Hamiltonian is zero in all physical states. So the problem with this expression is that every term in it is zero. So obviously, that's not going to help. Okay, all of these EIs are zero. And so we can't constrain its expectation value to anything other than zero. So what do we do? Well, these model cosmologies give us a very clear answer, I would claim, which is that that should be a minus one, sorry. K equals minus one, here's the zero lambda cosmologies, the matter density is diluted away at large A. And so gravity becomes negligible. You just have a box. It's just an expanding box. Effect of matter on the background space-time becomes negligible. And furthermore, the expansion of the box becomes adiabatic. It's just a box of flat space, and it expands slowly on any interesting physical time scale in the box. And so the entropy then reduces to that of the matter. There's no entropy in the metric anymore. It's just the entropy of the matter. So we want to calculate the entropy. That's quite easy. And furthermore, it's an adiabatic invariant. So even though the box is expanding, in fact, the entropy will always be constant. Every trajectory in the system ends up on an adiabat. The entropy is constant. So there's a relationship between the energy in the system and the size of the box given by A. And every trajectory ends on one of these curves. And so I would claim the most natural thing you can do is to label each cosmology by which curve it ended on, which adiabat it ended on. In other words, by this asymptotic entropy. So that's a number which it's very natural to fix. Okay? And definitely that is in the spirit that we should study an ensemble of spacetimes and define it by its asymptotic properties where things become sharp. So, maybe in some cases, that's worth worrying about. If that happens, then you would worry whether your maximum entropy principle was really a good thing to do. Yes. I would argue in inflation, it's the... No, I agree. But in the context of inflation, if you accepted one and two this is the only option. If you're going to count states, you have to do it in the place where... That's also true. That's also true. Okay, yeah. Exactly. Any number you like. From zero to infinity. Just pick that number. No. The measure is defined by maximizing the entropy. No, so I fix, if you like, I fix the, I'll show you how you actually do it, okay? But what essentially I'm fixing is the equilibrium entropy. I mean, the entropy is, if you define the entropy to sum over P log P, then it exists for any P's, but the P's, the probabilities, are determined by maximizing the entropy, subject to a constraint. You'll see. Basically, we'll do this using the matter. See, the point is that at late times, the only entropy I have is in the matter. And then I can just use ordinary statistical mechanics. So I'll... No, I'm not saying that. No, I'm not saying that. So maybe go back. So if I decide what final entropy I want, that tells me a relationship between the energy and the size of the box. So at each size of the box, I'm just fixing the energy in the box. It's all included. I've included everything. This is a complete picture. No, from this point of view, you would say, you see, if I'm looking at the final entropy and I want to, you know, what does that mean? Well, think of it this way. I want the measure for a universe which produces 10 billion galaxies. And this, you know, this in this particular model. And that this will be the measure. This will be the measure. Pardon? No. They're compact. They're all finite. So I want 1 million. I want 10 million galaxies in my box. This is the measure for producing 10 million galaxies. It's what we should do. In principle, I can't. I'm not going to calculate that. But I'll do some very simple examples, which you'll see how this works. But yeah, in principle, we should include everything. Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, actually not, because it's expanding, so the black holes will evaporate. So you'll end up in a box full of radiation and gravitational waves. So, absolutely, yeah. Okay, so let's do FRW cosmology from this point of view. And this is the generic case. So, okay, I could have some slow roll inflation, the potential energy, this is the total density against the scale factor. So in inflation, the potential energy dominates and slowly decreases. At the end of inflation, the scalar field oscillates, and so the density redshifts away like matter. Rho goes like 1 over a cubed. And then at late times, because I have some curvature around, the 1 over a squared will beat the, and by this rho, I actually mean the right-hand side of the Friedmann equation. The curvature will dominate over the oscillations. And conversely, if we trace it back to early times, there's a kinetic dominated phase. Okay, because this density in the kinetic energy goes like 1 over a to the sixth. So this is the generic solution behaves exactly like this. And we can look at all of them. Okay. So let's, for example, use this A equals constant slicing. Then this is the form, the omega. It includes this A cubed factor. The density is just this for if E is m squared phi squared. And at late times, we'll go like 1 over a cubed. Scalar field's just oscillating. And so rho a cubed, this quantity rho a cubed is c, and that's adiabatically conserved. That's an adiabatic invariant of the system. So essentially what's happening is the scalar field is running around in phase space, and this phase theta is increasing linearly with time. You can also see what happens to the background metric. This is the background metric, just written in terms of A as the time coordinate. And so what appears here is rho A squared. So if rho is going like 1 over A cubed, this term goes to 0 as 1 over A. So the asymptotic metric is just Minkowski space in these Milne coordinates with a 1 over A correction. And again, that quantity C appears in the 1 over A correction. So C is analogous to the ADM mass. At large radial distances, the metric goes like 1 over m over r. Here at large times, it goes like C over A. In the large A limit, the effect of matter becomes negligible. We just have flat space-time and an adiabatically expanding box filled with matter. So here's the statistical ensemble. I'm just going to do classical stat-mech on P and phi. Here's the Hamiltonian. Here's its expectation value. Let's fix it to be some number, E, the energy. And then you can go through all the steps and calculate the entropy. And the entropy is nothing but the log of this adiabatic invariant, which is the area enclosed in phase space of the orbit that you're on. And so this entropy is constant. Constant entropy is just fixed C. Okay, so C is that number. And constant entropy just means fixed C for that particular type of matter. This concept of entropy will hold for any type of matter. Beta is the temperature. The temperature is basically the energy. If you do classical stat-mech for an oscillator, the energy is the temperature, equipartition, right? So I just calculate E as it's T. So when you solve this equation for what you do is fix E and determine the temperature, and you'll find from this equation that the energy is the temperature. And then you calculate the entropy from the P log P, and using temperature equals energy, you'll get this result. Mini superspace. I'm only doing mini superspace. I said that. This is zero mode. All I'm studying is a zero mode. That's the one that drives inflation. So we'll get to radiation production later. Yeah, I'm using this one. Yeah, so what I'm doing is determining the probability distribution is the maximum entropy distribution, i.e., the usual canonical distribution, which gives as the value of the entropy this number, which I'm fixing. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to that. I'm just doing mini superspace. Nope. That's the whole point. Okay. Now, I want to make there's an amusing thing, which is that this constant C, you know, what is this constant? Well, I showed you it determines the departures of the space from flat space at large A. And more from a cosmological point of view, C is the value of the scale factor where curvature takes over from oscillations, right? So the rho matter goes like C over A cubed, curvature goes like 1 over A squared, so they're equal when C is A. And so if you want to study the importance of the curvature term, it goes through that, the curvature term goes through that point, goes like 1 over A squared all the way back. And then, of course, it may, depending on the value of C, it may kill the inflation, okay? Because as you trace it back, this term's going like 1 over A squared. So what you see from this is that for finite C, inflation actually gets cut off by the curvature. For infinite C, this curve will, well, depends on the order you take the limits, but for a finite amount of inflation, if I make C big enough, the curvature will never matter. Okay, so, well, there's some equations you can solve, but basically you can now determine the probability for a number of e-folds of inflation bigger than any number you choose. And let me see if I, yeah, so, and that's the answer. This canonical measure gives a probability for n e-folds, which is square root of n for v equals m squared phi squared. And then this exponential factor, e to the minus 3n, that's independent of the detailed character of the potential. That's universal. This one depends on which particular slow roll potential you have. And the e to the minus 3n is very easy to understand. You see, the measure I'm using is basically uniform in angle. That's what the canonical measure says. It says fix the energy, and then the field could be anywhere in an angle. But inflation focuses you on one particular angle with exponential accuracy. And so if you have infinite e-folds of inflation, you have a particular angle. Okay, the universe comes out of inflation with one particular angle at any given a. If you have a large number of e-folds, you're exponentially close to that angle. So all this information is just stored up in the angle. And that's the probability distribution. And actually, as I've explained, the finite C, so this is the curve for C equals infinity, infinite entropy. If I make the entropy any finite number, in fact, it's worse, okay? Because at finite C, you kill the inflation at early times with the curvature. And so this curve is upper bound on the probability. So you can so if you accept we should fix this final entropy, then it actually doesn't matter what value you fix it to. Slow roll inflation gives there's an extremely low probability of 65 e-folds of slow roll inflation, right? So it's e to the minus 195. Note the attractor becomes a repeller because the statistical ensemble is defined in the asymptotic region where gravity becomes unimportant, which is the future. So the fact that inflation is attractor actually works against you because it's a repeller as you go to the past. More inflaton fields makes the problem much worse, okay? So some people have proposed this theory of n inflation with n fields. But it's easy to see that if one field is a repeller going backwards, then n fields repel even more. And you just take that angle to the nth power. And so it's actually e to the minus 3nm. This problem gets worse and worse. And so this analysis really, as I said in the beginning, just makes precise a problem identified by Penrose a long time ago. And with this measure, inflation cannot, at least slow roll inflation models of this type, cannot be considered a viable explanation for the observed state of the universe. Well, what could be wrong? I mean, we're just getting this crazy measure that gives completely the wrong answers. But this is a pretty good measure. In fact, I think it's better than anyone else's measure in terms of the good properties it has. It is definitely better than anyone else's measure. Could the measure be wrong? I think probably we're deluding ourselves if we throw away the canonical measure, because then, as I said, you have to throw away the measure for quantum fluctuations as well.
Can I say very quickly why I'm talking about this? I think what you've done with the simple model is very useful. But I think in the model where we have a little bit of a little bit more complex, a finite fraction of this trajectory will have a
no. Okay, so I said at the beginning, I don't want to deal with eternal inflation. I'm just dealing with what's commonly known as chaotic inflation, which is nevertheless everywhere in textbooks on inflation. So I am actually dealing with the textbook example. Fair point. Okay. So this will be very interesting. People will have different objections, and each one will be different. But okay, so take that up with Linde. Linde proposes in 2005 that compact hyperbolic is the most natural setting. I'm just using this as a cutoff.
So yep. You're going to say that it's all Linde's fault?
No. I didn't say that. But I will quote that from you.
You are missing, potentially, just even within the structure, you're missing
okay.
a huge class possibility. And let me give a random, silly
if any physics can be thought of, it can be included in this. And this is the measure in the path integral. I'm using the appropriate measure. So you want to calculate Casimir, just do the calculation using this measure. This is the right measure.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Exactly. Absolutely. So it's totally obvious. It's totally obvious. Look at this picture. You look at this picture. So when people are doing phenomenology with inflation, what do? They pick some curve here, which is the slow roll solution. It's only one solution. That curve, as you will see, is joined by lots of other curves. And for some reason, you're just ignoring them. It's not overshooting. It's just you're not inflating.
No, sorry.
I said it wrong. The typical trajectory gets a small amount of inflation. The typical one will get 5 e-folds. Yeah. Yeah. Typical one will be 5 e-folds. Typical one is 5 e-folds. When we have
by saying we don't know things before a certain point. So let's make an initial condition.
How do you study black holes? Do you think they're well defined in the asymptotic region or near the singularity?
I don't think the right thing to do is specify what happens in the future starting out. So wait, let me just say, if we happen to know more than you would have given credit for, that we started in an inflation, a permanent inflation situation, then the initial condition
That's for a particular assumed initial state. It's a huge, I don't see any advantage to just plonking the field on the potential. That's not true. If I give you an arbitrary state in the, you are wrong. An arbitrary state in the false vacuum? No. If you allow me to set up a state in which the field is oscillating here, of course it won't be at rest when it comes out. Well, then there's one state you're talking about. Why is that generic? That's not generic. Right. Why is the false vacuum state generic? Generic. What's the probability to begin the universe in a metastable state?
I don't. But that's,
okay.
That's the
right.
That's
okay. Fine.
Are.
Fine. I. Okay. Okay.
I think probably most of us would agree it's not reasonable to say the universe started on a plateau and we need an explanation to go back to the
world. Absolutely.
Alan himself says if you can believe an impression, you have to believe it. Right? So
true.
We start with a hypothesis.
Most people who believe inflation are not aware of that.
Oh, yeah, that may be. I think you're making a very, very strong argument that we didn't just start on the
computer. Right. Okay.
But most of us believe that.
I agree. Fine. So all I'm doing is trying to make that as definite as possible. Yeah.
Intuitively, you sort of suspect it.
Absolutely. Exactly. Good.
So I think what you're saying is you quantify.
Right. Right. That would be nice. Yeah. I'm leaving. That's exactly Penrose's argument.
Yes.
That's Penrose's argument. Yeah, I'm just quantifying it. Yes, and I've given a definite definition of the ensemble. He doesn't do that.
Right.
And I've given a definition. Now, you may argue this definition is teleological and so on, but actually I'm struggling to, I think this is more of a challenge. Here is a definition, which at least satisfies all kinds of nice properties, and it's precise. If you are advocating slow roll inflation, I would say the onus is on you to show me a better one. Show me a better measure.
Well,
and
yeah. Knowing what we know.
Right.
What we know is that you can have a rest on the potential.
Okay, that's fine. I would put that in the class of an assumed initial condition, which is absolutely fine. Good. Then we're agreed. I just had one more slide. I was going to say something about reheating. But at least as I understand it, reheating is a unitary process. And so if you've got a certain fraction of quantum states which had a given number of e-foldings, reheating is not going to change that fraction. It's just a unitary transformation. That doesn't change the proportion of states with a given property. So I don't think this is affected at all by reheating. Are inhomogeneities going to rescue this? No, I don't think so. They're going to make it worse, as Andy says. You trace an inhomogeneity back in time and it explodes. Quantum fluctuations, no, I severely doubt they would rescue this. Well, is inflation right? Okay, so maybe false vacuum inflation is the answer. We should just throw away all the slow roll, you know, monotonic potentials. Okay, I'm happy with that. That's okay, fine. No, if you're really saying inflation only works with the false vacuum, you are saying that, essentially old inflation is right and new inflation is. Yeah, no, I know that.
Yeah,
I know that. I did all the calculations for open bubble quantum fluctuations, so don't worry, I know all about that. I just want to point out something intriguing, which is I know people are very skeptical about cyclic models or bounces or whatever, but there's a very intriguing fact in this respect, which is that the asymptotic region in those models is in the past. That's where they become simple. And they have an attractor going forward in time, and now everything works the right way around. Okay, that you take a generic state in the past, asymptotic region, you run it forwards, and almost all states will have the full ekpyrotic phenomenon. And so, anyway, that's a relevant thought. And I wanted to say what I've described is only the classical theory. I don't think quantum fluctuation is going to make a huge difference to the monotonic potential. But actually, you can do semi-classical theory in exactly the same way. And you have a weighting factor given by E to the IS. With tunneling, you can do it with complex solutions. We know how to do that. So the whole thing can actually be extended. I have not done it, but I believe this analysis can be extended to a semi-classical analysis. And we'll see what the answer is. Thanks. Well, let's just step back, because my whole goal here is to define things sufficiently precisely that we know what we're talking about and we can calculate it. Now, in the usual approach, one doesn't do that. You don't talk about future infinity. You don't specify the initial state. People say it's Bunch-Davies vacuum, etc. From this point of view, the only way to rescue slow roll inflation would be to do the following: to assume all inhomogeneous modes are in their ground state initially. Okay, I mean, I think, which is the normal assumption. So I'm willing to grant you that assumption. Let's do that. And then we evolve this class of universes. And in the future, we calculate their entropy. That's what looks to me like you should do. And so then the question is, are you going to get the dominant trajectories being ones which jumped up the hill and had more inflation or not? I don't know what the answer is, but I think it's a doable. No, because I'm calculating the probability. I'm calculating the prior probability. I mean, this is what you should use when you calculate the probability of some observation. I'm just giving you a definition of it. Yeah. Yeah, but you see, when you define the statistical, how long is a piece of string? I mean, would you say it's more probable for me to find a very long piece of string than a short one?
No,
just because this is volume factor. So, yeah, so I would say that defining the final entropy in the way I've done just incorporates the volume factor. I mean, in other words, the statistical measure is not defined unless you specify some additional information. And the thing about volume factors is you're saying, oh, great, I got lots more volume, but who's to say it's in the same ensemble? Everything is finite here. Everything is finite. Not in this case. I'm not going to get that. I don't have. My final entropy is finite. I mean, how can I possibly get that?
You're correct. You told me wrong. I'm not. You're correct.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to cut the conversation off if we're going to make it for lunch today. although I encourage people, well, hopefully Neil will join us for lunch, and I encourage people to wrap and stuff.
Please.